Welcome. This is the first meeting of the Health, Housing, and Family Security Committee, and we've had several overview hearings, as you know, with other committees, but this is the first time we've met as a committee on our own. So I wanted to start out by introducing staff. First of all, from Senate Counsel and Research, many of you, or most of you, I hope have had a chance to meet, Katie Kavanagh, Dave Giel, and Joan White. And in your packets, I believe, is a, I think there's a thing with a sheet that has members of the committee on it, and on the back side, it tells which areas they tend to focus on. And if you have any questions, call any one of the three. I'm sure they will steer you to the proper person, if not. In addition, we have Dave Godfrey, I think a lot of you met the previous one, who's the fiscal analyst who deals with the budget division, and the committee administrator, Tom Goldstein, sitting over there. The legislative assistant, Laura Blubaugh, is right here, and our page, Sarah Johnson, who is over there. So if you need any help, please always feel free to ask. And we will have, we've got a lot of bills already been introduced to the committee. We're going to be having a lot of meetings coming up fairly shortly. But today we're going to deal with two bills on universal health care, constitutional right to health care. We're not going to be taking action on the bills. We'll just present the bills, take the witnesses, and discussion, debate, whatever. If you have amendments you're going to be offering, you can offer them. If you can mention them at least if you want. You don't need to. But then we're just going to have the presentations pro and con and debate today. Senator Corey.
And then, Mr. Chairman, we would be taking up amendments at a later date then on this?
Yes. Senator Corey, we will be, we'll have full chance to debate, amend anything you want later. But I'd like to at least have all the witnesses make presentations.
Sure.
And you can question, debate, challenge, whatever you want to do today.
Okay.
Just we won't be acting formally.
And then, Mr. Chairman, if somebody was not able to be here and they have written testimony and they'd like to have that entered into the record that they were expressing their interest in this bill, could we have that be entered into the record, Mr. Chairman?
Senator Corey, you can certainly, we can have the page distributed to the committee. And again, if we can talk about if they wanted to speak at another time, or if it's related to an amendment, you can always, when you offer an amendment.
Okay. They wanted to have this into the public test that they
sure.
were opposed to your bills, and so if we could just have that distributed to the members and some for the audience.
We'll leave the leftovers
at
the end of the
okay.
table for the
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Public. And with that, I'll turn over the gavel to Senator Torres Ray. You can come here if you wish. Madam Chair, we have two bills here, and just to put them in the order that I'll be presenting them, I had two amendments, author's amendments, that just to put it in the shape here, again, it's not any of the other amendments we're not going to deal with today, one of which on Senate File 14 would move to strike everything but sections 3 and 4, namely the constitutional amendment. So everything, the only thing that would be left in that bill would be the constitutional amendment. All the rest of that language is what consists of Senate File 102. So, Madam Chair, I'll just move that as an author's amendment to Senate File 14.
Okay, Senator Marty, thank you. Are there any questions about the author's amendment?
Madam Chair.
To Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Marty, just so I am clear, what you're suggesting is on Senate File 14 to strike everything except for lines 415 to the end. Is that correct?
It's 415 through 429. The effective date would be stricken as well.
Okay. Thank you.
Are there any further questions about this? If we don't have any more questions, we'll proceed to pass the amendment.
All those in favor.
All of those in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All of those opposed?
And, Madam Chair, to the Senate File 102, I just had a one-line amendment on the A7 amendment, I think was in the packets. And that would change just the makeup of the commissioner's working group in that proposal, and it would insert equal representation of health care providers, patients, representatives of employers and employees, instead of the current wording there.
Okay,
Madam Chair.
Excuse me, Senator Marty. Yes, Senator Bergman.
Madam Chair, I have the A7 amendment, but I don't have the one we just adopted.
One we just adopted was just an oral one to strike sections 1, 2, and 5.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Okay. Is that okay, Senator Berglund?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm with you now.
Okay. Are there any questions about this amendment? We'll move to vote. All of those in favor of the amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All of those opposed? Okay.
And Madam Chair, I'm going to speak to both bills together and several witnesses to one or the other, and the opposition, those concerns, can speak to either one of the bills as well. As I said, we're not going to be taking any action on them today. But okay. The concept of a constitutional amendment for health care is something that I believe we as a nation already decided in 1948 we were signatories to the Universal Declaration of Human Rights at the UN, which basically declared that every person on the planet has a right to health care. And we as a nation have never quite fulfilled that right that we believe in here. We do have some people in our state have a constitutional right to health care already. U.S. Supreme Court 30 years ago in a decision, the Estelle versus Gamble case, declared that all prison inmates have a constitutional right to health care. I happen to think that the rest of our constituents, all the people of Minnesota, deserve that same right that prison inmates have. I think it's an issue that we, frankly, people of Minnesota, deserve the right to see the doctor. They deserve the right to go to a health care provider when they need health care. So I think it's critically important that we get there. And to look at the scope of the problem, I think many of us on the campaign trail last year, we heard many times over and over again people who cannot afford health care. We have 380-some thousand Minnesotans who do not have any insurance. They're uninsured. But the problem is actually much bigger than that. Many people who are insured have big gaps in their access to health care. Just this morning, an individual stopped by my office. He was covered by Medica MinCare to tell me how he was referred to an endodontist for a root canal. And so he went and checked the provider booklets of who was eligible to provide this service. He found 9 endodontists that he could use. He called each and every one of them. One of them was in Duluth. One was Golden Valley. I don't know where they all were, but he called as far away as Duluth to get an endodontist who would cover him. Not one of them had room for any Minnesota Care patients, or if they did, they said there would be they'd be put on a waiting list. How long would it be? They wouldn't give him a date. They said it'd be at least many months. He went to Delta Dental, gave him a few other names of potential providers to go to. He called 3 or 4 more that they had given him. They suggested the U of M Dental School, and apparently for some reason they had a waiting list too. And finally, the advice he got, he eventually found somebody to cover him. But before that, he got to the point where he was advised to go to the University of Minnesota emergency room for his problem. And then they could get him into coverage at the University of Minnesota Dental School. This is an individual who has medical coverage. This is an individual who's paying his premiums into Minnesota Care. He can't get it. I think we've seen the problem. It hits every age group. It hits young college kids who are graduating from school, have no insurance, no way to get it. Their jobs that they find don't cover it. We have seniors who thought that Medicare was going to take care of them in their retirement. Even with costly Medicare supplements, many of them find they can't get the needed care. A whole lot of working people, and this is a change that's been occurring and growing in severity over the years, workers find they don't earn enough to pay for health care, so they put off the preventive care that they need, and we wait until the problems get worse, and then they go and get emergency room treatment or more serious treatment because they did not go for the coverage for preventive care because they didn't have any coverage. We have people who are switched from their doctors and healthcare providers not by choice or for medical reason, but because they switch jobs and their new employer doesn't have the same providers. So we have people who are dropped from a doctor who's been dealing with them for 20 years or more. They switch. We have the loss of continuity, which puts their health at risk and wastes a lot of time and money. And the lack of affordable health care creates a huge burden on the entire economy. We have lost worker productivity. We have employers who are struggling to find it, but they can't get certain employees because they can't cover them because of pre-existing conditions. We have workers who stay in the same jobs even though they're not the best jobs for them because at least I got benefits here. They don't look for the jobs that are best suited for them. And it creates burdens on the economy in terms of higher special ed costs because we haven't addressed kids' needs to address hearing aids and trying to prevent infections, ear infections from spreading to hearing loss. We don't do enough to address preventable infectious diseases. And we don't do things like preventing long-term care, which the costs are getting more and more out of reach because we don't do enough in terms of affordable in-home care alternatives. And the taxpayer costs for issues like health care and crime go much more severe because we don't do a good job of addressing chemical dependency and mental health. If you look at who makes up our prisons, a very high portion of them are people who have serious mental health and or chemical dependency problems that we're not treated. These problems all end up being worse for everyone, including those of us who are insured, because when a hospital or a provider has an uninsured patient, they end up shifting the cost to those who are insured and to taxpayers. We have all the paperwork and all the, as much as I've heard, 30% of our healthcare system is going into paperwork between insurance providers and health plans and patients and doctors, and you look at what's being wasted there. We have a tremendous amount of money going there. And if we provided health care for all Minnesotans, we would free small employers from wasting their resources on finding an affordable plan for their employees. It would help us in countless ways through preventive care. I think we all recognize that we're harming our constituents by not addressing this. The National Institute of Medicine in 2004 estimated that, and this is nationwide, that some 18,000 people a year, six times as many as were killed on 9/11, are killed by the lack of access to health care in this country. And when to get a sense of the difference between those who have no insurance and those who have insurance that is inadequate, I think many of you have heard the statistic that over half of all bankruptcies in this country are caused by health care. And of those people who are bankrupt because of health care, three quarters of them were insured. They were insured at the time of their illness. They lost their coverage because they couldn't work anymore or some other problem. So I'm going to quickly go through the two bills and then take witnesses. First of all, Senate File 14 is a constitutional amendment which would provide that by the end of the decade, if voters approve the amendment, the Constitution will read that every Minnesota resident has a right to comprehensive health care, and it's the responsibility of the governor and legislature to enact the legislation to carry this out. That's very simply what the amendment would do if it was passed. It would go on the voters before the voters in the 2008 election for ratification. In Senate File 102, which is the remainder, the things that we struck from the first bill, has some findings that explain what the nature of the problem is. And Section 2 is the gist of the bill, and it calls on the Commissioner of Health to establish a working group to design a universal system of health care for Minnesota, suggests who the Commissioner would put on the task force, and tells them they can do it any way they feel appropriate as long as it meets the requirements in Subdivision 2. These requirements for universal health care, page 3 of the bill, would require there are 9 specific criteria the Commissioner's health plan would have to come up with, and that is that it would ensure all Minnesotans have access to health care regardless of income. It allows patients the ability to choose their own providers. It doesn't deny care or restrict the quality of care in order to hold down costs, but uses prevention, efficiency, and elimination of bureaucratic waste. It would provide comprehensive benefits, and I think this is critically important, comprehensive benefits including mental health care, including chemical dependency, including eyeglasses and dental care, prescription drugs, medical equipment and supplies. I think many of you have heard from diabetic people who can't afford the basic medical supplies they need every day. I think that's wrong. Anyway, the commissioner would have, under this bill, would have until January of 2008 to present a plan to the legislature. Obviously, it would be our obligation to either adopt or modify or propose something else. But I believe it's time that Minnesota steps forward and says, we're not going to incrementally say, I mean, I think we should this year, we should be working on incremental things. I hope we cover all kids this year. But I think we should also be in bringing more farmers into the program, helping people who can't get MinCare coverage, expand it to them. But I think it's time to say that we ought to extend health care to all Minnesotans by the end of the decade. This is not rocket science. In the early 60s, John F. Kennedy told our nation that he was going to put a man on the moon by the end of that decade, and that was rocket science to do that. In this case, there are lots of places in the world where they do have coverage for all people, everybody, and it's comprehensive coverage, and it costs a lot less than we're doing, primarily because they go at the upfront savings through prevention. And with that, I'm happy to take questions. Otherwise, I wanted to call on Barbara Dickey, the Executive Director of St. Mary's Health Clinics.
Madam Chair.
Thank you. Members of the committee, do you have questions?
Would we be taking questions now to the author of the bill, or should we take, are we going to take testimony first or and then questions? Or?
Madam Senator Chair, Marty. Senator Coring, it's, I would go through the testimony, but if you have questions you want to address now, you really want to address now, fine.
I can wait till after the testimony.
Madam Chair.
Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess before the testimony, I'd like to, Senator Marty, just ask a couple of, I hope, clarifying questions. Sure. And maybe you can address them before we hear the testimony. But I'd like to understand how passing a constitutional amendment, what is the mechanism that by virtue of doing that, that we change anything? It's unclear to me that you say that we don't really have a right to health care, but I don't know who doesn't have the right to health care in this country. You talk about the prison population, that they're the ones that have this right, but I don't think anyone would argue that health care in prisons is superior to health care for the rest of us who aren't in prison. So I'm not sure why having a constitutional amendment does anything to change the dynamics, unless, as you kind of alluded to later in your comments, as a precursor to saying that it is the mechanism by which we then make health care a totally governmentally operated enterprise. Because that's the only way that, as government, that if we say we're going to do this, then we, meaning government, we're going to do that. And I guess that raises a host of questions in my mind. Why don't we have a constitutional right for housing or for food or for a high-paying job? Why do we not do those kinds of things as well? And so I'm trying to understand the rationale, the logic, and what it is about a constitutional amendment that does anything to change the dynamic of what we're trying to wrestle with, which is how to make sure that the costs, primarily, of health care are better able to be borne by all citizens.
Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, Senator Hahn. We have one other area of the Constitution where we have a requirement like this where the legislature and governor have to do something. That's providing a system of public education. It's not something now when you turn 5, you well, I don't know if I can afford to go to kindergarten or not. You have that right, and the state has to make sure you have that right. This plan, I mean, in Senate File 102, it suggests a plan, a process on how the Commissioner of Health can design a system that is going to make us address that. But it is one that the public would have that right, and we would be responsible not for running it. I don't support a system where we have government doctors and clinics and so on. I happen to, my personal favorite way of doing it would be that we have where government would pay the bills for it and negotiate fair processes for providers to deliver the services. But whether you do it that way or whether you have some sort of other way in which we make sure that people aren't denied the ability to go to the doctor because they don't have the money. I mean, that's the point. We have to find a way to make that happen. And this would basically say you have a right to this health care, and we've got to provide it.
And Madam Chair?
Senator Hahn.
Thank you. Just to sort of follow up, and thank you, Senator Marty. I appreciate that. But I think your example about education is maybe an illuminating example, because you're right, we do have in the Constitution this mandate that we provide a system that's commonly understood to mean that the system is one that is run by government, and it tends to be 90% of education is run by government. And as we've seen, highly resistant to saying that the private marketplaces have a role in that, and the resistance to funding private enterprises in education. And you run all kinds of church-state things. And so if we do this for healthcare, obviously that would raise implications about, well, can a healthcare service that's operated by a church or a denomination, that probably wouldn't be acceptable. It would run afoul of what constitutional provisions is that they're commonly understood. So, and I guess the other thing about that analogy is that you talked about the need to eliminate waste and trying to drive costs out, but I'm not sure that in our education system we are confident that we have any incentives in that system to accomplish that. Typically, when you look at efficiencies and driving waste out and lowering costs, that happens through a competitive marketplace, not by an operation that's dominated by government. So, again, if we're trying to put in place a model that is similar to the K-12 education system, I'm not sure that will accomplish the things that you say that we need to get done. And can you comment on that?
Sure. Madam Chair, Senator Hahn, there's a big difference in the two amendments. The point was people have a right to public education. And the point of the difference between this and that is that says we have a right to the legislature's an obligation to provide a public education system. This does not say a public health care system. It says every resident has a right to health care. And that's the difference. Again, I do not favor a system where we have, I think the British system is a public system where the doctors and others are all government employees and so on. And I'm not proposing that, and this amendment doesn't require that. What I'm saying is that when there's a constitutional right, people get the service. And we have a right, the only mention I know in the Constitution right now of a service that we promise people is education. And I believe that as our nation determined 50 years ago in signing on to the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, we think everybody in the world ought to have this right. I think Minnesotans ought to have this right. And again, our prison inmates do have that right. And I can tell you a whole lot of people I know who can't go to the dentist, who can't go, they can't get basic medical care. And I think they deserve that right.
Thank you.
That can be a philosophical difference. You may not think they should have that right. I think they should.
Thank you, Senator Marty. Senator Wergie?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Marty, one of the things that you referenced in when you were talking about your bills is chronic illness and the cost of chronic illness. If we were to move to a statewide system or whatever you want to call it of health care, and everyone has basically instant access on demand, where would the incentive be for well care? I mean, if you can live whatever lifestyle you want, irregardless, because you know the medical care is going to be there when you need it, where would the incentive be to live a healthy lifestyle?
Senator Marty.
Chair, Senator Wergen, I think that's one of the key things that what we gain from having universal health care where everybody has access to it, because then you find out it might be cheaper if we work aggressively in the schools to make sure that kids get the screenings they need. If we make sure that early childhood kids get the health care screens they need to find out if they've if they've got hearing loss, if they have some sort of disability that we could prevent early on, that we could address. It saves money through all those things. The incentive right now in terms of under our current system, whether people have health care coverage or not, we unfortunately have a lot of problems with whether it's chemical use, whether it's obesity, whether it's a whole range of health concerns. I think that we as a society got to start tackling these questions, and whether we have health care or not, there are plenty of people who have these health care problems who are uninsured. Many of them are uninsured, and so instead of getting the help that might make their problems get better, we wait until they go to the hospital room, emergency room, because they've had a heart attack because we didn't do anything up front. I'm convinced that the prevention is the most important single thing we could do in our healthcare system.
Senator Marty, we have about, members of the committee, we have about 11 people that we need to hear from. Unless you have any objections, I would like to move to the next step so that we can hear from the witnesses that you invited. Is that okay, Senator Ward? Okay.
If so, I'd like Senator to call Marty. Barbara Dickey, the Executive Director of St. Mary's Health Clinics.
Welcome, and thank you for coming, and please introduce yourselves.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee, and Senator Marty. I am Barbara Dickey, and I am the Executive Director for St. Mary's Health Clinics, and I'm here because I believe it is my responsibility to be a voice for the thousands of low-income Minnesotans who struggle because their personal situations do not allow them access to health insurance. St. Mary's Health Clinics are a network of community-based free clinics. We hold our clinic sessions in donated space in churches and schools with the assistance of 200 volunteer physicians, nurses, interpreters, receptionists, and drivers. We also provide specialty care through a network of 600 specialty physicians who volunteer their services in their offices at no charge. Hospital services through our 13 contracted local hospitals and medications are also provided to our patients. We see about 9,000 patient visits annually. As a ministry of the Sisters of St. Joseph of Carondelet, we have been providing health care to low-income uninsured residents of the 17-county metro area for over 14 years. I believe it is our mission to not only provide care for those who are left out of the current healthcare system, but to also be an advocate for change. In most instances, people come to us because they are desperate. They are not indolent. They are not looking for handouts. They are hardworking, productive people struggling to care for their families. Many are in low-paying jobs that do not offer health insurance, or when offered, the premium is not affordable. We do not view ourselves as the answer to the health care needs of the poor and uninsured. We are only a safety net. We believe health care is a basic human right, and nothing would please me more than to be able to go out of business when Minnesota resolves our current health care crisis. We currently provide free health care services to eligible patients with the understanding that they will work with us to apply for the state programs for which they are eligible. But this is no easy task. Some of the recent changes in general assistance medical care, we continually run into barriers as we attempt to assist our patients in navigating through our current health system. I have asked Karen Ingebretson to join me today. Karen is our Minnesota Healthcare Programs Coordinator. She was previously employed with Hennepin County for 30 years as a principal financial worker and economic assistance unit supervisor. Today, I will present two actual patient situations for you. Because of the critical nature of their health, they are unable to be here in person. Karen will then present the problems we have encountered with their access to healthcare options, and then she'll go on to summarize the common problems we deal with daily. The first case is a diabetic woman in her early 60s. She has been seen in our clinic since summer of 2005. When she came to us, she had not been covered by health insurance since late 2004 and consequently had not received any medical care for her diabetes. She was employed in a part-time job and not offered health insurance. This past December, she came to us with a complaint of repeated spontaneous episodes at rest of extreme heaviness in her upper arms and chest pressure and pain. After coronary angiography, it was determined that she needed immediate three-vessel coronary artery bypass in order to prevent a massive heart attack and possible death. At St. Mary's Health Clinics, our next step was to move into the surgical pre-authorization process. I would now like for Karen to elaborate on what options were available for this patient.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you.
Please.
For the surgical pre-operation,
I'm sorry. Yes, please introduce yourself. Thank you.
And I am the Minnesota Healthcare Coordinator for St. Mary's Health Clinics.
Thank you. Welcome.
For this particular patient and all of the patients that need surgery, I get involved to find out if one of the state healthcare programs are going to be able to help pay the cost of the hospitalization or the procedure. In this particular situation, the patient was told that she needed a quadruple heart bypass. She would be eligible for Medicare in November of 2007 when she turned 65. However, this type of surgery could not wait 11 months. I then assessed her income for the various Minnesota healthcare programs and determined that the part-time income she had exceeded the guidelines for every program. The best chance for any type of coverage through one of Minnesota programs was to schedule the inpatient surgery for the first week of January. There was some chance that because her inpatient hospitalization, the necessary rehab, and the inability to work for a short period of time, that her average income would fall below the guidelines so that she would be eligible for the General Assistance Medical Care Program, which is also known as GAMC, or the General Hospital-Only Program, which is known as GHO. Because there's no retroactive coverage for either program, and coverage can begin no earlier than the date the application or the written intent is received in the county of residence, we immediately faxed a written intent to the county on December 19th. We then assisted the patient to file an application. None of the diagnostic procedures, including the angiogram that were done prior to December 19th, will be covered. The GAMC and GHO programs are the only programs available to adults between 21 and 65 with no minor children in their care, other than Minnesota Care, which takes about 3 months to be approved. The GAMC program allows an average income of $613 a month over a six-month period of time. And the GHO program covers only inpatient hospitalization with a cap of $10,000 and allows an average monthly income of $1,430 a month for the six-month period. Persons undergoing a successful heart bypass would not meet the Medicaid disability criteria. I might also use the term medical assistance or MA when I talk about Medicaid. She would not meet the disability criteria because she would not be unable to work for 12 months. The GHO program does not pay for rehab that isn't part of an inpatient hospitalization, and the GAMC program will only pay for rehab on an outpatient basis or in a clinic or rehab facility. If the patient is not able to get to these facilities or the facility is not willing to accept a patient who is not able to pay, doesn't have health insurance, and has not already been approved for a state health care program, those patients are often just out of luck. In this particular instance, our clinic has guaranteed payment to the rehab agency. The bills for this patient are astronomical, and there is a high probability that most of the bills to date will not be paid by any of the state health care programs.
Thank you. Do you have anything else to add?
Madam Chair and Committee,
yes.
I would like to present our second case, if I could, and then could we field questions?
Okay. Go ahead.
Our second case is a 61-year-old man who was employed part-time and not offered health insurance through his employer. Since fall of 2006, he had been experiencing great difficulty in swallowing with extensive weight loss. It gradually became so difficult that he could only swallow liquids. Because he had no health insurance, he had delayed access to health care. After coming to our clinics a few weeks ago, his health status was evaluated, and he was found to have a large esophageal cancerous tumor with extensive metastasis. Because of the invasive nature of the growth, he is not a candidate for surgical removal of the tumor. About a week or two ago, he had a feeding tube placed and will now undergo chemo and radiation therapy as a palliative treatment.
Thank you.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
At this point, again, this was a patient who was in need of immediate medical treatment, and I got involved with trying to determine which, if any, of the programs he might qualify for. I assessed his income for the two health care programs for an adult age 21 to 65 with no children in their care, and of course, again, that would be GAMC or GHO. Certainly his treatment could not wait the 3 months it would take to be approved for Minnesota Care. Because he was working at the time and his income was above the Minnesota Care income guidelines, we were not even sure that he would qualify for the GHO hospital-only coverage. Again, because there's no retroactive coverage for GAMC or GHO, and coverage can begin no earlier than the date the application or the intent is received at the county of residence, we faxed the intent to the county on January 3rd and assisted the patient to file an application. All of the diagnostic charges in December will not be covered. His doctor indicated that he would be unable to work for at least 4 months, so we hope that he might meet the income guidelines for GAMC with an average income allowed of $613 per month for each of the 6 months. However, this program has a maximum inpatient cap of $10,000. The patient was discharged to his home with a feeding tube, and the need for home health care to prepare for radiation and chemotherapy in an effort to shrink the tumor prior to surgery. The medical providers are reluctant to cover home health care if a patient has no insurance, cannot pay, and hasn't been approved for one of the state health care programs. So we had to guarantee that payment. The bills are now increasing at a tremendous rate. Health insurance has been approved through his employer. However, it excludes pre-existing conditions, and he won't have any income to pay the premium anyway. We're hoping to get him approved for Medicaid for the disabled, which uses the same criteria as Social Security. This is because the medical coverage and the payments are considerably better than either GAMC or GHO. However, this can easily take 2 to 6 months to be certified disabled. We have referred him to apply for Social Security disability and Medicare. However, even if he is certified disabled, because he won't be able to work for 12 months, benefits are not issued until the beneficiary has been disabled for 6 months, and Medicare doesn't begin for 24 months. In the interim, bills continue to mount with no guarantee to any of the medical providers that they will be paid by any of the Minnesota state health care programs. He expressed to me just last week, and I quote, "My only hope is that I live long enough to see some of the benefits approved."
Thank you, Ms. Ingebrigtsen and Ms. Dickey for coming to testify before the committee. I would like to ask you to please use the microphone to answer questions. Are there any questions from the committee?
Madam Chair.
Senator Bergen.
Madam Chair, I just wanted to make a comment on both of the witnesses' testimony about the length of time it takes to get enrolled in Minnesota Care. The law itself says that the department should process any requests within 30 days. And so I'm thinking, members, maybe we should put the department on a pay-for-performance standard.
And Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Berglund. Yes, Senator Curran, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is this St. Mary's Hospital? So you're testifying favor of this bill, and that's St. Mary's position on this bill. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, Senator, we are a nonprofit organization. We are a ministry of the Sisters of St. Joseph, and we are testifying because we believe we have an eye on the issue, and we wanted to share it with you.
And Madam Chair, that would be the position of the sisters and the St. Mary's and the hospital? And
I may not speak for them, but for myself, we are in support of this.
Okay. So just to get it correct, you're speaking on behalf of yourself or you're speaking on behalf of your whole organization?
I'm speaking on behalf of the patients that we see.
Okay.
I think their story needs to be told.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Thank you, Ms. Dickey. Thank you, Senator Corey. Senator Hahn?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for your testimony. The question I have is, how would the passage of a constitutional amendment change the dynamic of what you described? As I understood, your description of the two cases are two people that had health care issues that were addressed, that were cared for, that they got their needs at least on the way to being addressed. There was a process they went through. The difficulty seems to lie in who pays for this and how it is paid. And what I assume you're saying that you as a hospital are not willing to absorb all those costs on your own. They don't have insurance and in some cases. And so to me it seems as if this is a debate about who should pay for health care, not about whether people have access to health care or that they don't have a right to health care. It's about who should pay. And so I'm trying to understand, if we pass this constitutional amendment, what would change in the dynamic of the patients that you described? What would be different once that amendment was passed?
Ms. Dickey? Senator, I just want to clarify that we are not a hospital. Our name is St. Mary's Health Clinics, and we are a nonprofit ministry of the Sisters of St. Joseph. We operate on donations and gifts and grants, and that's how we fund our operations. Our belief, or my belief, is that people have a right to have a basic human right to health care. In terms of how it is funded, we would be more than happy to share some of our processes and how we look to stretch a dollar to assist people in finding health care. But in terms of how the state funds health care, I'm not able to speak to that.
I would like to encourage the witness to use the microphone, please, so that everybody can hear you. Thank you. Senator Harrison.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you very much for coming here and sharing testimony. It's always a very important piece, although there are two examples, and it's anecdotal evidence. I think it really reflects a great need across the state. I think many of us that were campaigning probably heard over and over and over and over from our voters and constituents as we door knocked examples of situation similar to yours where it is an access issue, and I would disagree, Senator Hahn. It's an issue of access for many people. But I wonder, in terms of the larger question in front of us today, we're talking about a constitutional amendment that would say people have health care is a human right. That getting into details like who pays and how we move to a universal health care system is not part of the discussion on the amendment, but that would come at another point. The point we need to talk about, I think, is do people believe that everyone deserves affordable, comprehensive health care?
Thank you, Senator Erickson. I don't know if Senator Marty wants to respond to that.
Madam Chair, Senator Hahn, I think Senator Erickson Ropes said it well. And the constitutional amendment language here, again, it puts on us and the governor the responsibility of implementing legislation to ensure affordable health care. There are various ways people can and choose to provide it. I think what we have to say is we're not doing it now, and these people who have come to St. Mary's Health Clinics they don't have access to it. And a lot of people, even those with insurance, there are many times when you don't have access to the medical care you need. I think if we determine it's a right and make it our responsibility to do it, we'll deliver what the people of Minnesota deserve.
Madam
Thank
Chair.
Thank you, sir. Senator Marty. Senator Corey.
Madam Chair, this relates to the clinic, so I thought I'd ask this too. Is Senator Marty, if let's say hypothetically this passed, and you were saying that the government would negotiate the rates. Well, right now, I have a lot of dentists who will not accept the public programs because the reimbursement rates are so low. So they won't even, there's an access problem where people, the dentists are not taking these people because they don't even get paid for their cost. And so if we pass this, but yet we're going to the government's going to negotiate a something that's $100 and we're going to pay somebody $50, then how are the clinics going to be able to continue to operate if we've herd everybody into this and we're not going to reimburse, the reimbursement rates aren't going to be high enough to cover the cost for the clinics and the hospitals and so on and so forth. Does that make sense?
Madam Chair, Senator Coring, I understand the question. Two responses. First of all, I have a health care coverage through the state of Minnesota, and I've been to the dentist several months ago. I got to go back for a filling. My dentist doesn't complain about it. Matter of fact, I think most of you here have the same coverage. I mean, whether it's a different plan or not, but we all have coverage through the state plan. The state is dishing out the payments. That's the way it works. And frankly, this bill, the requirements that the commissioner would have in developing the system, number 9 on the end of subdivision 2, criteria is that the system must provide adequate and timely payments to providers. Because, I mean, it's you're not providing coverage. Again, the individual who I was talking about earlier who stopped in my office today couldn't get an endodontist to cover it under his Medica Minnesota Care plan. Nobody would cover it. So, again, that's not providing health coverage. That's not providing health care. And so, yes, of course we need adequate payments as one of the requirements in the plan that they have to do it. But, I mean, the point is the state's negotiating. I mean, I'm not negotiating my rates with my dentist. The state is negotiating for me and for you and for everyone here, and they're doing a fine job of that. I just think our constituents deserve the same that we have.
Thank you, Senator Marty. Unless we have more questions, we're going to move. Again, we have about 11 people who came to testify, so we need to proceed. Thank you. Thank you very much, Ms.
The next one I would call is Tara Ryan.
Excuse me. I have Senator Lynch has a question. Go ahead, Senator Lynch.
Madam Chair, I just wanted to clarify that are we hearing testimony on the constitutional amendment?
That is correct.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I was suggesting if people wanted to ask questions or testify on either one, because both bills are in front of us, but we're not acting on either bill. So if witnesses wanted to speak to one or the other, I know there are several people in opposition to them, they can, I don't care, whatever they want to speak on the issue. So.
Is that okay? Thank you. Thank you to the witness for coming to testify. Senator Marty, who is next?
Ms. Ryan is.
Hi, my name is Tara Ryan. Thank you.
Mrs. Ryan. Could you please introduce yourself and use the microphone?
Sure. My name is Tara Ryan. I have a 4-year-old daughter who does not have health insurance and goes to St. Mary's Health Clinic when it is available to us. My daughter had medical assistance until she was 2 years old. I've always been fortunate enough to have a good enough job where I had health insurance. And when I was pregnant, my health insurance didn't completely cover the birth, and so I was grandfathered into a program which gave her medical assistance for 2 years. After the 2 years, her father was court-ordered to pay for health insurance, and so I just assumed because he wasn't being responsible and paying for child support that somehow he would be responsible to the state and that the county would still provide health insurance for her, and that was not the case. My daughter has asthma, and the first time I went to pick up her prescription after finding out that she didn't have health insurance, the cost for 1 month was $330 for the albuterol that needed to be administered through the nebulizer for her. I work for St. Paul Public Schools. I'm a manager for the before and after school program. I do have a decent job for a single mother, and everywhere that I looked for help or for assistance, I was turned down because of the money that I make, which is not a lot of money, but considering to get medical assistance, I believe you can't make more than $8 an hour for a mother, a single mother of one child. So my testimony today is just to say that I am trying to do what I need to do as a mom, but the resources are not there. I know this is not a discussion about welfare, but as I improve and as I get promotions at work and I get a better position at work, everything gets cut off. Daycare assistance gets cut off. Medical assistance gets cut off. I did apply for Minnesota Care, and I was denied because health insurance is offered to my daughter through St. Paul Public Schools, but the cost for it for a single plus one dependent is $360 a month, and it is something that I cannot afford to pay. Her asthma has been under control in the last couple years. Like I said, we go to St. Mary's Health Clinic, and we were able to switch the medication that she was on and provide a different medication through an inhaler with a special tube that she takes every day, and then another medication through the nebulizer in situations where she's having wheezing or specific difficulty with her asthma. Working with children and as a mother of a four-year-old child, every day that I drop her off, I worry if she's going to get hurt at school. I mean, children play. I've had kids in my program fall on the playground and break their arm, and I think, what would I do? You know, an emergency room visit would put me in such a financial difficulty if anything bad happened to her, knock on wood. I've been very fortunate and lucky that nothing has happened, but that is something that's always in the back of my mind. I'm currently attending St. Thomas, working towards my master's in special education through a program with the district in St. Thomas that's paid for. And my number one goal and my number one reason for doing that, not just to better myself, but to get my daughter health insurance, because I cannot afford to pay for health insurance. I really don't know what else to say. I don't know if anybody has questions.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Ryan, for sharing your story.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Madam Chair, help me understand, Ms. Ryan, just a little bit, if you could. Your single coverage is supplied by the school district. You don't pay for that?
I just started having to pay this year, and I pay about $60 a month for my own. It's always been free. I've worked for the district for going on 4 years now, and my health insurance has always been free. And through Minnesota Care, they look at the complete coverage for me and my daughter. So right now for the district, it's about $1,200 a month for my insurance and for what her insurance would cost. And because the district pays $800 towards my premium, Minnesota Care looks at that. It's more than half, obviously, of $1,200. So then I do not qualify for Minnesota Care for her.
Okay. Madam Chair. Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair, I just want you to know that under the provisions of Senate File 2, you would be able to apply for Minnesota Care if that passes for your child.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Do you have any other questions for Ms. Ryan? No? Okay. Thank you, Ms. Ryan.
I'd like to call Honey Mirande.
Mirande.
Good afternoon,
welcome.
Madam
Thank
Chair.
You for coming. Please introduce yourself.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. My name is Honey Mirande, and I have to clarify that is my given name. I've lived with it for 50 years. I'm sharing. Can you hear me?
Maybe you need to pull the microphone closer to you. You can pull that. Yeah.
Bad chest deal going on here.
Thank you.
This is a very personal story of mine. A little bit of history here. Once again, my name is Honey Mirande, and I am married. We have a beautiful 15-year-old daughter. She is an honor roll student and on the varsity volleyball team at Orono High. We are very proud of her, and she is our shining star. My husband and I have worked in the middle-class income range for over 30 years. He is self-employed in the advertising field. After 9/11 and increasing instability within the advertising industry, my husband lost many clients. Out of desperation, he attempted a new business. He made poor decisions under stress, and 1 year later, for the first time in our lives, he filed Chapter 13. We no longer have any savings or stock or retirement funds. But thank God we still have our home. Our daughter's life has not been damaged by forcing her to leave her wonderful academic and social community. Under these circumstances, we certainly have not been able to afford any type of health insurance for the past 3 years. A couple years ago, I was told about St. Mary's Health Clinics. They allowed me to see a physician for thyroid medication and depression. In November last year, 2006, I filed for Minnesota Care Insurance. I believed at the time we were in good health. In December of 2006, my Minnesota Care application was still pending. I needed my thyroid medication refilled. Also, I wanted a professional opinion regarding a suspicious growth under my arm. Again, St. Mary's Clinic referred me to Park Nicollet Clinic with no charge to me. 12 years ago, I had had a bilateral mastectomy due to cancer. 1 year prior, my mother died at age 57 from breast cancer, 6 months before my father's full retirement. Due to my mastectomy 12 years ago, I thought I was cured. Just now in December of 2006, the physician at Park Nicollet evaluated me and immediately referred me to the Jane Bratton Center. On December 26th, 2006, I was diagnosed with aggressive invasive adenocarcinoma. This diagnosis is shocking to my family and I. Honestly, though, I was more distraught and deeply concerned that I could not proceed with medical treatment until I could figure out a means to pay the bills. We had no means to pay for the ultrasound, biopsy, lab tests, surgeon consults, pre-surgery radiology, pre-surgery physical, etc. All concerns combined, I felt terrific despair. Then I received a phone call from Karen Engelbretson of St. Mary's Clinic. She told me that I had enough to worry about regarding this new cancer, that I cannot wait to get medical care, that I should proceed immediately with all medical treatment. She said St. Mary's Health Clinics will take care of all medical obligations. Karen Engelbretson is my angel. My surgery will be on February 1st, 2007, to remove the tumor and determine if the cancer has spread. I am not afraid for two reasons. Through the tremendous care and generosity of St. Mary's Clinic, I was able to receive immediate medical support. Secondly, I have tremendous faith in the professional abilities of each staff member that I have met with at Park Nicollet Clinic and the wonderful Jane Bratton Center. I'd like to give you something all to think about, because I have. So many middle-class Americans cannot afford medical treatment or health insurance. Imagine your adult daughter, wife, mother, or sister has been diagnosed with invasive, aggressive cancer. Though they work each day, they cannot afford any health insurance or to get medical treatment. How long would you tell them to wait for some type of funding that maybe may offer financial assistance? 4 weeks, 2 months, 6 months, or perhaps not at all? For me, just personally, it is a reality that quite possibly St. Mary's Clinic has saved my life. Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Morandi. Are there any questions for the witness? Thank you very much, and I hope everything goes well with your surgery in February.
I'd like to call Please. Carol Spector, Children's Defense Fund.
Welcome, Mrs. Spector. Could you please introduce yourself?
Yes. Madam Chair and members, my name is Carol Spector, and I am the Advocacy and Legislative Affairs Director for the Children's Defense Fund, Minnesota. I thank you for the opportunity to be here today. I'm here today to testify in support of Senate File 102. First, let me just tell you briefly about the Children's Defense Fund. The Children's Defense Fund Minnesota is a private, nonprofit advocacy organization that engages in research, advocacy, outreach, and public education to improve the lives of Minnesota children and their families. Children's Defense Fund Minnesota has long advocated to ensure all children have access to affordable, quality health care coverage. In the current complicated health care system, Minnesota children are falling through the cracks. As health care costs increase, access to health care coverage provided by or employer-based health care coverage for children is declining, and the safety net is not catching these children. There are currently 68,000 uninsured children in Minnesota. Of particular concern is the jump of the number of uninsured, of our youngest Minnesota children between 2001 and 2004, which is the most recent data available from the Minnesota Department of Health. That was an increase of 11,000 in uninsured for children ages 0 to 5. We know from research that these are critical development years, brain development years, and these uninsured children are less likely to get the immunizations, well-child visits, and necessary health care services that they need. So this is just one demonstration of a concern with the health care system that's failing children. On a brighter note, research shows that healthcare coverage is the first step to good health, which ultimately contributes to the success in school and in life for children. Healthcare coverage is a determinant in whether children get preventive care and other necessary care. Uninsured children are five times more likely to have an unmet medical need than insured children. In addition, insured children miss less school and they perform better in school. Ensuring healthcare access for children is also good for the healthcare system. Uninsured children are four times more likely to use the emergency room, which I think we all know is the most expensive type of care. That often happens because they've also waited too long to get the care because they couldn't get it before it became emergent, and that shows that they aren't getting the care they need and it makes it more expensive. In 2004, the uncompensated care cost for children alone was $74 million in Minnesota. As we've been traveling around the state talking to Minnesotans, we are hearing over and over and over again that healthcare is a top priority. The commissioner's work group that would be established in Senate File 102 would establish a mechanism to really start grappling with the hard decisions that need to be made in order to ensure that all Minnesotans, including all Minnesota children, have access to health care coverage. Children's Defense Fund Minnesota supports the principles set forth in Senate File 102, in particular, that all Minnesotans, including Minnesota children, have access to quality, affordable health care coverage regardless of income. That the coverage promotes preventive care, and that it ensures comprehensive benefits. Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Spector. Are there any questions for the witness? Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we'd like to call Mary Jo George.
Ms. George, thank you. Welcome. Please introduce yourself.
Yep. Good afternoon. My name is Mary Jo George with the Minnesota Nurses Association. The Minnesota Nurses Association represents about 20,000 registered nurses in the state of Minnesota. We're here today to say that we support the approach of a constitutional amendment. We worked with Senator Berglund on her bill last year because nurses have long believed that health care is a basic human right. And we think we need this approach so that we can really hold our feet to the fire to solve the problem. For those of us who've been here for a long time in the early 90s, we legislated universal coverage, but we unfortunately that didn't happen. We repealed that language. So I know many of you have been struggling with how would the system look like, how would we design it, but those are questions, as I think Senator Ropes said, that we would answer later. What Senate File 102 does is develop the plan that we could all, as stakeholders, come up with a way to solve this crisis. And we feel that it's imminent that we have to do something soon because, you know, you've heard the testimony today. We have lots and lots of gaps. But I think, you know, from our perspective, we see that people right now under our federal laws have a right to ER, the ER room. And this is the most expensive care. So why shouldn't we create a system where we have a right to coverage that we hopefully could be, as Senator Marty's bill has pointed out, would focus on primary care and community care, because that is nurses' vision too. I mean, we fundamentally think we have to tip the funding structure of our healthcare system on its head and start focusing and redirecting our current focus on our healthcare system, which is based on what we think is an overuse of high-end expensive technology and acute-based care to more preventive community-based care. And that's what we see in this plan, that the idea is let's get there. We also think that, you know, the education system is a good analogy when looking at how we would design our healthcare system. We think, you know, at least in our education system, we provide K through 12 education, and then we can augment that with higher ed through private or vocational training. We believe it's going to be fundamental that we define an essential benefit package that everyone would have access to. It may not include everything, but we have to at least sit down and have the hard discussion. So the last thing I just wanted to say is that we worked with Senator Marty to make sure that the work group would be balanced. You know, we think it's really important that we get a diverse group and that we have equal representation. So thank you.
Madam Chair.
Thank you, Ms. George.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for your testimony. Question I have, though, you referred to we need to have a right to coverage, although Senator Marty's bill is a right to health care. You testified that we currently have a right to health care. It may be expensive. It may be, not the most efficient. But you seem to be advocating for something slightly different than what Senator Marty's bill says, which is a right to health care, not a right to coverage. Now, maybe I'm misunderstanding, but I don't think they're the same thing, are they? Or are they intended to be the same thing?
Ms. George, please.
Madam Chair, Senator. Well, I think when we were looking at this, and I would have to look at the language, I probably am imagining a right to access to coverage, a financing, a way that we would finance the health care in a cost-effective manner.
And Madam Chair.
Senator Hahn.
And Madam Chair and Senator Marty, that was my point before, that we're not talking about whether or not people have access to health care. We're talking about how to pay for it, in which case it's very critical to answer the question of how we're going to do this rather than say, well, let's put in place this mandate and then figure out later how we're going to do it. We could put in place the mandate and find out the only way we can really do this as it is envisioned is to make it 100% tax on everybody's income. I'm just joking. But my point is that if the real issue is how we pay for this and how we provide affordable coverage, then it is very critical we understand the mechanism before we agree to adopt it. So I think the point you're making is making my point. And if you're at cross purposes with Senator Marty, then maybe you can clarify that.
Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, Senator Hahn, I don't think it's cross purposes. The fact that she said that we have access to emergency room care, that all people have that access to emergency room care, that's not access to health care. That's access to one small part of health care at the worst possible time. It's the people who testify here who couldn't get, who don't have the screenings, who don't have everything else along the way. Yeah, if you have a heart attack, they're going to take care of you in an emergency room. Yeah, you can say that's a right, but that's not health care. That's just the emergency room care. I think we got to provide the whole system so we prevent that stage. I don't think you can call these people who have been testifying here as people who have health care coverage. And whether you call it access to health care or health care coverage, I don't care how you phrase the term. The main point is people have to be able to afford to go to the doctor, and they don't have that opportunity now.
And Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Senator Marty, and I appreciate that. And I think that's kind of the heart of what I'm trying to get at here. I think that the real issue here is the costs of doing this and how we're going to structure those costs. And that's why I'm not sure that just having an amendment saying people have a right to this is any significantly different than what we have today. We do recognize that there are differences and difficulties in how we pay for this, and that is something that we haven't found a way to resolve. But having in the Constitution a verbiage to say that people have a right to this doesn't resolve that. And I'm just concerned that by doing that, we do end up mandating, in effect, a government-run system when, in fact, there may be other ways to provide ways to cover people at a cost-effective way. I frankly believe that a better way to do it is to make sure we have a robust market. That may be different than what your vision would be, but the point is, I don't know that you need to have a constitutional amendment to get that to happen. I think the real difficulty is for us to figure out how to pay for it, and that, to me, is I think, central to this debate.
Ms. George, and then we're going to give Senator Erickson Robes.
Okay.
Go ahead.
And Madam Chair, Senator Hahn, you know, it is just probably a different way of approaching the problem because we've been here, we've tried that. Unfortunately, we didn't make it happen. And so we know it's going to take work. And we just think we need to, without a constitutional amendment, we won't have the political will to solve the big problem. But I agree with you that it is a financing problem. We've got to get there. We think the constitutional amendment gets us there in a safer way than without. So thank you.
Thank you, Ms. George. Senator Erickson Robes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Marty and Mary Jo, thank you for your testimony. And again, I appreciate Senator Hahn's interest in the detail here and trying to distinguish whether we're talking about the doctrine or the mechanism. And again, I would say we're talking about the doctrine. And you used the example earlier, Senator, about education, which I think is a good one. I would imagine when our forefathers sat here in the Capitol and came up with the Minnesota Constitution and wrote into the Constitution that they would provide an adequate, uniform, and thorough system of public education, that they did not say, oh, let's not pass that because we don't know what the public school system is going to look like. And in fact, today, how many years later, we're still wrangling with how the public school system is working and how we're going to deliver education to our children. So we do need to keep our eye on the ball here. It is about doctrine. It is about the concept of, do you believe that every Minnesotan has the right to affordable, comprehensive, universal health care? Then, if you believe that's true, we need to figure out the details.
Thank you, Senator Erickson. I think, Senator Berglund, you had a comment before. No?
No.
No, okay, I'm sorry. I thought I saw your hand.
I thought I did a while ago, but I think I did that one, and I don't have another one. I think you were waiting, but
Senator Prentice-Allen.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, and I agree with the previous speakers, but I think it's really very important for us that we have tried to advance this discussion for a good long time, and until we have a constitutional amendment before us that states that we are going to do this, how are we going to address the cost? I mean, we have to have the political will to move us forward. And as I read this constitutional amendment proposal, it states nothing about universal health care, quite frankly. It states that it requires the governor and the legislature to implement necessary legislation to ensure that affordable health care is available to everybody. I have no objection to universal health care, and I advocate for it. But it does not require that. It requires us to have the discussion to come up with a solution for it. The other thing is that we are the most costly health care system in the world, and we're the only industrialized nation without universal health care. There's something to be said about that. Other people are way ahead of us. The other thing is every other nation has better outcomes than we do, health care outcomes than we are. We're doing something wrong, and we need to learn something.
Senator Worgen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Probably are the most expensive health care in the world, but we also have to remember that we are the research and development center for the world, too. And that's where an incredible amount of that money comes from. In the countries that do have universal health care systems of some type, there isn't even remotely close to the amount of research and development that we have here in the United States. That's part of why we're expensive. The reason that folks that have breast cancer and kidney diseases and everything else can get the help they do is because here we have a system that encourages research and development and therefore we end up with some good cures, and that we have a long ways to go. I'll admit that, and we do have some problems with our healthcare delivery system. I'll readily say that, but I need to go back a little bit to Senator Hannan and the subsequent comments about the political will. I think that's true. In the past, there really has not been the political will to deal with this issue that there is today. I think there's a great deal of political will. And in some ways, I do believe that to just throw a sentence out there for a constitutional amendment certainly would not even begin to address the problem like we here as legislators should do in the absence of a constitutional amendment. I really don't think that this has the weight that some think it does. In a way, it's like the MVEST amendment that we passed just short time ago. People didn't even realize that what we were actually doing is creating a hole in the budget. People didn't realize that it didn't create any new money. There was a whole lot of skepticism, mysticism about the whole question, and I don't think that passing another question for a constitutional amendment changes that without some well-defined ideas that go behind it. So with all due respect, Senator Erickson-Rope, I don't think we can separate the amendment from what and how we fund. I think they have to go intricately together, and we have to move forward with a solution along with the amendment if we're going to move forward with an amendment.
Thank you. Just to remind the committee about the timing. So, Senator Coring, we're going to take, I don't know if you have questions for our witness or not, but Senator Coring,
I would just make
Senator
this
Burden.
Very quickly, Madam Chair. Thank you. And as most people know me around here, I'm probably not the furthest right person in the Republican Party, and I do care deeply about the people of Minnesota and providing health care. But I am troubled by this, and I do have the question of how we're going to pay for it. And I'll just cite, and I think that Senator Hann, my good friend, is just asking the question, how are we going to pay for it? You don't go and buy a new Cadillac and not know how you're going to make the payments. And that's the only question that I think he's trying to ask. And I would just point out one specific thing in your bill, Senator Marty, on Senate File 102, where it says on Section 1B, it says, these are the legislative findings, which I don't agree with necessarily. It says, many seniors find that Medicare, which is promised health care in their retirement, does not provide needed coverage without costly Medicare supplemental policies that even then cannot receive care. So I know my dad has a supplemental, so I'm concerned that everybody that's retired and has Medicare, then is the state going to take the place of all those supplementals that we're going to pay for all of that to Senator Marty? And so I guess that's what concerns me is how much is the price tag going to be on this? And so I think we need to be mindful of that. And so that was with that same vein of how we're going to pay for it. And you guys know me well enough to know that I want to make sure that all Minnesotans are covered. But we still have to be good stewards of the taxpayers' dollars and that we're not going to break the bank on this. So that was just a comment, not really a question. So thank you, Madam Chair,
so,
and I won't be.
We can, Senator Berglund, and then we move to the next witness.
I won't make my comments very long because I hope we'll have another day to talk about this sometime soon. But let me just say this. Our current financing system has found a way to build into itself financing of all of this inefficient and unnecessary emergency room and unnecessary hospitalization care. And it would be my hope that if we could have something like this constitutional amendment adopted by the people of the state of Minnesota, that then we would not only have a reason to take that stuff out of the system and redirect it into more appropriate, less expensive care, but we also would have a mandate to do so. And when you rearrange financing within the healthcare delivery system, believe me, it's not a very easy thing to do. Probably, some of the worst kinds of discussions we get into in my division are, how much is each hospital going to get to pay for their quote-unquote uncompensated care? Well, we don't even spend that much time in my division talking about how we could avoid uncompensated care. Mm-hmm. And so I just think we need to remember that the whole financing system we have today is based on an inefficient and ineffective system of health care that we have today. Now, you know, Families USA did a survey of all the states in 2005, and what they found in Minnesota was that we were paying, on average, $700 a month per family in our insurance premiums for uncompensated care. So it's not just the state programs that are paying for this. It is the private sector also that is paying for it. And I just wanted to say that so we can keep that in perspective. It's so easy to say, well, we can just go with what we've got. We know what we're doing there. We're paying for stuff that we shouldn't pay for. Trying to get us to a point where we talk about how to redistribute the dollars we have today to spend them in a more effective way is a very hard discussion to get around to having.
Thank you. Do you have any questions for our witness? Thank you, Ms. George.
Madam Chair.
Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, I'd like to call Julie Schnell, and while she's coming up, I did want to comment on, I think Senator Coring or somebody said, about we have the political will. Back in November, the governor said he supported covering all kids. Now is a step towards eventually ensuring covering everybody. And last week or a week and a half ago when he came out with his plan, it was going to address the needs of 13,000 of those uninsured kids when they're about 70,000, maybe one in five, one in six of them. It's easy to make the statements and then, well, back away from it. I mean, it's 2 months we went from covering all to dropping five-sixths of them. And I think I'm concerned. I don't think we do have the political will unless we determine and the voters ratify that there's a constitutional right to it. In that case, I believe we will. But we don't have it now. But I'd like to call on Ms. Schnell.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you,
please
ma'am.
Introduce yourself.
My name is Julie Schnell. I'm the president of the Service Employees International Union, SEIU, Local 113, and the SEIU Minnesota State Council. SEIU unites more than 28,000 working people across the state of Minnesota. Among them are hospital, clinic, and long-term care workers, janitors and private security guards, and those who work in our public schools. Healthcare reform is the number one priority for SEIU members because, as is the case for many Minnesotans, the cost of healthcare is making it more difficult to raise our families. The members of SEIU know this reality very well because more and more working people are going underinsured or without health insurance altogether. We are beginning to see the impact of the lack of affordable health insurance in our communities, not only from the heart-wrenching stories of people who having making decisions between house payments and health insurance for their children, but also in the cost hospitals are having to absorb in uncompensated care. Last week, the Department of Health reported that Minnesota hospitals provided $191 million in uncompensated care in 2005. A 26% increase in 1 year. As we know, this cost is passed along to those who are insured in the form of higher premiums, deductibles, and co-pays. And it really is a vicious cycle. For instance, janitors in the Twin Cities are facing extremely expensive premiums for family health insurance, with some plans costing as much as $1,800 a month, roughly equal to a month's salary for a full-time janitor. As a result, 14 out of 4,200 janitors are enrolled in family coverage through their employer, and less than a quarter are enrolled in any plan at all. The people who work in our hospitals are also facing a healthcare crisis. Charged with caring for patients every day, many hospital workers face family health insurance premiums of $500 a month or more. So, unable to afford health insurance, working people become uninsured. And this is the cause of rising health care costs in the first place. It's clear that when anyone goes uninsured, everyone pays. Senator Marty's proposal aligns with many of SEIU's principles for health care reform in Minnesota. All people deserve quality health care regardless of their ability to pay. We must reduce costs through prevention, chronic disease management, improving efficiency, and eliminating bureaucracy, not through passing more and more of the costs onto Minnesotans. The benefits are comprehensive and focus on prevention and an overall public health approach to managing health care outcomes, and the system should provide geographic accessibility for providers and facilities. That's why we're proud to support Senator Marty's bill today. This is a time for real solutions to the crisis facing many Minnesotans. This bill makes solid progress in our path forward to quality, affordable health care for everyone. Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Are there any questions? Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Ms. Schnell, thank you for your testimony. Just a couple of questions. Does your union provide health insurance to your members, or do they get that from their employers?
Ms. Knapp.
No, we do not. This is something that's negotiated with employers.
And Madam Chair and Ms. Schnell.
Senator Hahn.
In the course of the bargaining that your union does with employers, do you not bargain for affordable health care? Why would that not become the priority and say we want low health care costs or low health care insurance costs with the people that employ our workers? Why has that not been able to be accomplished?
Ms. Schnell.
Absolutely, it is a priority. It is a priority currently for SEIU Local 26 and contract negotiations. You know, the priority gets to be work stoppage for workers to go on strike to make those things happen. We just had a recent campaign in the Twin City hospitals, and although the employer provides 80% for family coverage, 80% for single coverage and less for family coverage, it is still unaffordable for working families. And so, yes, it is a priority, but when you're faced with a work stoppage, no income, to make that priority a reality, it just becomes overwhelming for workers. And so we're just faced with trying to do incremental steps to try to make health care affordable.
And Madam Chair, just...
Senator Hahn.
Thank you. And Ms. Schnell, just one last follow-up. I think to me, again, this indicates one of the issues where it really comes down to how this is paid for, that you have your bargaining units and conversation with your employers, and healthcare is a priority, and yet you can't make that work because either the employers say they can't afford to do it at the rates that your employees would like, or to get it done, you have to threaten to, you know, go out on strike, which has other implications. So the point is, I think, that this debate is really about how we pay for this, how we structure the finance of it. And until we resolve that, and with all respect, I don't think it's a lack of political will. I think that there are significant differences in how we do that. And I think that Senator Marty and his approach to the constitutional amendment and looking at 102 in the language that was stricken from the constitutional amendment, all the findings would suggest that what his vision is that this would be something run by government, and the question is, what does that cost? And if we can't find a way to bargain for it under the current circumstances in a way that is affordable, that suggests that there may be a very, very high cost to do what we think we want to do. And we ought to know that before we agree to just adopt this. That would be my view. Maybe you want to comment on that.
Thank you, Senator Hahn. I wanted to make sure I understood this, that you said 14 out of 4,200 are covered.
Yes,
could you repeat
correct.
That?
Yep, there's 14 out of 4,200 janitors enrolled in family coverage.
Okay, thank you. And I also wanted to ask Ms. Schnell if you could respond to the question from Senator Hahn with respect to the work that you're doing. How long have you been in negotiations to get this for Chapter 26? I think it's been a few weeks that you're trying to get the contract for the janitors.
Right, Local 26 and... It has been in negotiations for quite some time. But, Senator, with all due respect, I couldn't disagree with you more. It is not about money. It is about political will. The fact is that there is so much money in the health care system as it is right now that we could pay for health care for every man, woman, and child in this country. And so, to me, it is making sure that there is an opportunity to get the right people in the room, to have the political will and the force of a mandate to make sure that we take care of this problem. Every other country has figured out how to provide health care coverage, comprehensive health care coverage to their citizens, and I just believe so strongly that there is enough money in this system. It is just an opportunity to get the right people in the room to figure out how we provide it. So with all due respect, I disagree that it is about financing.
Thank you, Ms. Snell. Are there any more questions for the witness? Senator Erickson Rhodes.
Madam Chair, I don't have a question, but again, I have a comment. And Ms. Schnell, you mentioned the fact that many other countries have gone to universal health care. And then I think you also mentioned that you work for SEIU. I wonder if the chair would just allow me to, for the record, read the names of the countries and some other organizations besides SEIU that endorse the concept of moving Minnesota to universal health care.
Go ahead, okay. Senator Erickson.
Now, of course, these countries aren't endorsing Minnesota's move to universal health care, but they provide their own citizens with universal comprehensive and affordable health care. Argentina, Australia, Austria, Belgium, Brazil, Canada, Cuba, Denmark, Finland, France, Germany, Greece, Ireland, Israel, Italy, Japan, the Netherlands, New Zealand, Norway, Poland, Portugal, Russia, Saudi Arabia, South Korea, Sri Lanka, Spain, Sweden, the Republic of China, Taiwan, and the United Kingdom. These are countries that have gone before us, and finding that way to provide affordable health care coverage for all of their citizens. And besides SEIU, there have been many organizations across the state of Minnesota who have come out to endorse the concept. And I would just like to read through a few of those.
Just read a few, please, because we know the list is very long. So okay. Go ahead.
Well, and I won't go through the whole list. But just the American Medical Student Association of Minnesota, the American Public Health Association, Minnesota Nurses Association, we heard from, Minnesota Psychological Association, Minnesota Public Health Association, the National Association of Social Workers of Minnesota, Minnesota Farmers Union, Minnesota Association of Professional Employees, the League of Women Voters in Minnesota, and that's probably just half the list. But you
can
see that there's a large number of citizens and statewide organizations that support this concept.
Thank you. I was told that we really need to end because most of us have a committee meeting after this. So we have a few people who have come to testify against, and I would like to ask the committee to refrain for questions so that we hear from the people who are opposed to this bill. Thank you. Yeah. Senator Marty.
I think they can come up on there. I have Beth Hartwig is the first name on the list I had seen.
Welcome. Thank you for coming. Could you please introduce yourself?
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Beth Hartwig, and I represent Minnesota Business Partnership. The Minnesota Business Partnership is, just because I haven't spoken yet to this committee this year, I'll tell you a bit about who we are. We represent 110 large companies that employ over 400,000 Minnesotans across the state, 1.9 million people worldwide. And annually, our companies distribute $15 billion in wages and benefits and contribute $300 million to Minnesota charities. Now, on the issue before you today, I appreciate the opportunity to speak to Senator Marty's bills regarding health care constitutional amendment and the universal health care. Health care costs and the related issues continue to be a top concern for employers and their employees. All of us, employers, employees, and taxpayers, face a growing inability to pay for the demands in our system, and we recognize that reform is needed urgently. The U.S. may have a private sector in health care, but our current system is not a private free market system. 50 cents of every healthcare dollar is spent by government. Only 14 cents out of every dollar comes out of the pocket of the individual. We have a quasi-socialist, quasi-private system. We, the partnership, believes that healthcare can be market-based and patient-centered system with appropriate government safety net, with the correct competitive incentives. and we continue to work with a variety of stakeholders to develop ways to achieve this vision of a market-based patient-centered system. There's been some talk about whether this is about the financing or if this is just about the idea that everybody should have the right to affordable health care. I want to address both of those points. We disagree that a single-payer system is the solution for Minnesota and believe that it would be taking the success of our system and throwing it out with the failings, and we recognize that there are failings. It may actually create new problems for our citizens. Single-payer countries across the world, and you just heard a list of them, are experimenting with privatization because their single-payer system isn't working to the best of its ability. In Canada, there is about one private clinic a week opening up to address the additional concerns of health care of its citizens. The Supreme Court there recently ruled that access to a waiting list for health care is not access to health care, and that's a lot of what they experience there. In Britain, they're quadrupling the number of surgeries contracted out to the private sector. In Sweden, most of the primary care is privately contracted, and the largest hospital in Stockholm is a privately run hospital. The partnership agrees with the premise of ensuring everyone receives high-quality care. We have a vision of health care. This vision on health care says, quote, "No one will be excluded from health insurance market because of race, geographic location, economic status, employment status, or health status." But it is just one of a 10-point plan that also addresses market, choice, personal responsibility, quality and cost information, competition, increased efficiency, and finally, as I've mentioned before, that we believe healthcare reform should enable a market-based, patient-centered system that delivers quality care. My understanding of the language describing the working group created is that it would allow market-based options to be considered as a solution, and I would welcome participating in those discussions. However, I am concerned that a constitutional amendment requiring implementation of a plan from that work group contains problems. Primarily, it does not define what affordable and comprehensive is. Even if the recommended working group plan is approved by the legislature, the courts will be asked to intervene and provide a definition if one person is unsatisfied with what that means, what that work group plan means for them. We've experienced that with education, as we've been discussing. A constitutional amendment campaign has the possibility of taking a very important and complex debate, and it will be fought in the media based on sound bites, 30-second ads, billboards, with little understanding to the public of the core issues. Some have suggested that there has not been political will in the legislature to address health care, that we need to hold our feet to the fire. I would disagree with that. The health care debate has been a rich one in the legislature for years. We may disagree on what the solution is. I think we all agree on what the problems are. I think we all agree. I would venture to guess that not a single person in this room would say, no, people shouldn't have access to affordable health care. We all agree that that's a problem. And we agree what the problems in our system are, portability, access, affordability, but we disagree on what the best solutions are. And that's what this process is about. It's about achieving a consensus. And just by stating that it's a right is not going to necessarily make that happen. There have been changes. They've been incremental. We pledge to continue to work on a solution for Minnesota. With that, I conclude my comments. I'd be happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Hardwick. Since we have about 5 minutes to end, I would like to call the other witness.
I think we are into 2:30. 2:45.
Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair?
Do we call the next? Do you have a question?
Just one quick comment, and that is that passing of a constitutional amendment does not mean that we would necessarily have a single payer system.
Mm-hmm. I agree, and I'm sorry, Madam Chair, Senator Berglund. I would hope that we would be able to work with Senator Marty on the work group language.
Okay, and then, Madam Chair, I just wanted to read one other thing into the record, and that is that. This is a quote from an article that was printed in the Washington Post this week, and it was entitled "Universal Health Coverage Attracts New Support." And it begins with, "Harry and Louise have had a change of heart." And I'll just read one paragraph. "Many are not willing to wait. Karen Eningi, president of America's Health Insurance Plans, the same industry associated that once funded the Harry and Louise ads, was among representatives of 16 business, medical, and consumer groups last week who called on Congress to spend $45 billion over 5 years to extend health coverage to most of the nation's uninsured children. After that, the group said lawmakers should direct billions more toward covering uninsured adults.
Thank you, Senator Berglund. Are there any other questions for the witness?
Madam Chair.
Yes.
I have just one comment that's kind of been percolating with me as we've been listening to this debate and came pretty clear here. I've heard reference to the difficulty of people to evaluate and vote the way they truly believe on a constitutional amendment on health care. And I think that our recent experience with the MVEST amendment was a bit complicated and distorted in the press, and people didn't necessarily understand. And that's because I'm not so sure that belonged in the Constitution. The constitutions are meant for to delineate basic human rights. And I think when we get it down to basic human rights, one of which I believe is health care, the people can weigh that carefully and say that, yes, I believe that health care is a basic human right that every person in the state of Minnesota is entitled to. And I don't think that the 30-second sound bites are going to shake them one way or the other, and that if they are offered the opportunity to tell us at the legislature that, yes, every Minnesotan is it does have the right to health care, that it will hold our feet to the fire and hold us accountable and get us the political will, if you want to call it that, put it on the blackboard. Get us to remember that this is what the people of Minnesota sent us down here to get done, and let's get to the work of doing it. So thank you for your testimony.
Thank you, Senator Lurie.
Chair,
any other questions?
Reply.
Go ahead.
I agree. I think that it is a simple question that you're putting forth, but the I would just encourage the body to consider the ramifications of putting that in, the legal ramifications of having a court come in and determine whether or not the plan that you have put forth does achieve affordable and comprehensive.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Hardwick.
Madam Chair, I had Aaron
Senator
Sexton
Marty.
From the chamber.
Welcome. Could you please introduce yourself?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Erin Sexton, and I work for the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. I first want to start by being very clear that the Minnesota Chamber does support access to quality, affordable health care. We represent over 2,500 businesses in Minnesota who employ around 500,000 people. Healthcare costs continue to rise, healthcare is an issue that is on the front burner for every employer and, of course, many employees. Employers are still the major source of health care insurance for Minnesotans. Nearly 63% of Minnesotans do receive their health care benefits from their employer. Minnesota employers do want to continue to offer good quality, affordable benefits to their employees, but this is becoming increasingly difficult. We do share the goal to reform our health care system, but we do believe that that a market can work in health care with an appropriate safety net included. We think that lawmakers should focus on policies that allow businesses and individuals to purchase health insurance in a private, competitive, and well-informed market that encourages value and discourages waste. I do want to say in addressing Senate File 102 that we appreciate the broadness of the group that Senator Marty is putting together and would also look forward to participating in that discussion. But I also think that some of the requirements that are laid out in that bill are awfully prescriptive. I think we need every tool in the toolbox to address health care reform and achieving universal coverage. And by making those requirements so prescriptive that we might be eliminating options that could help in the discussion. Once again, we do need to get creative to address this. I think we all recognize the issues at hand. If that working group is established, we would encourage that group have the flexibility to look at all options to achieve universal health coverage, and then let the legislature accept or reject those recommendations. I would also like to raise our concerns with the constitutional amendment put forward in Senate File 14. By creating a right to comprehensive, affordable health care, we are not addressing all the issues around all the issues and problems with our health care system. I think people have pointed to education as a right, and we continue to have debates on how that is best delivered and the issues around education. So this would not solve our problems or give us a solution to health care. We're concerned that this legislation would ask voters to support amending our Constitution to make affordable health care a right without any details on how we're going to accomplish this. I know that it would be dependent some on the work group that Senator Marty is proposing, but we don't know that the solution will come out of that group. We don't know what will happen. And I think, we have a number of questions that then brings up. Does this mean a single-payer system? I know it doesn't require that, but could it be? Would it be an employer mandate? Is it a state solution or a market solution? How does the state ensure affordable health care for everyone, and what is the definition of affordable? What is the definition of comprehensive, and will the state be funding this new system, and if so, how? I think those are important questions that need to be considered as we're looking at this constitutional amendment. We do absolutely share the frustration that we've heard here today from many of the people testifying about the rising number of the uninsured, about the escalating health care costs. But we don't believe that by simply passing a constitutional amendment we're going to get there, and this will be a panacea by any stretch. The Chamber wants to continue to be a partner in the discussion on health care reform, and we would look forward to participating in any work group that's put together, whether it's through Senator Marty's bill or Senator Berglund's bill. We want to be part of a discussion. We want to be part of the solution, and we do feel the urgency that many people here feel also. But we want to make sure that as we're discussing this, we're not only talking about access, but we are talking about affordability. We're talking about quality. We're talking about making our healthcare system a better system for all Minnesotans. However that's achieved, we want to achieve those goals. And by just doing a constitutional amendment, I'm not sure that gets us to that goal. So I appreciate your time today.
And thank you, Ms. Sexton. Senator Marty.
Madam Chair, I just had one question from Ms. Sexton. Well, you mentioned at some point the concern that these were very prescriptive criteria. Mm-hmm. I wondered if there's any one in particular about the patient choice of provider or comprehensive benefits or the focus on preventive care. Were there any one in particular just general concern about it?
Absolutely. I mean, I think the one that you could absolutely point to is the comprehensive benefit one. I think there's been a lot of discussion in different groups, whether it's an individual mandate or what that might be on what a benefit set should look like. Should be a minimum benefit set required that the state would pay for, and then the individual is responsible for paying for benefits above and beyond those, and what those benefit sets would look like. And I think that's a good debate to have, and how that comes up would be interesting to see and what that work group comes up with. But I think that should be able to be part of a discussion.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Sexton. Are there any questions for our witness? Thank you.
Madam Chair, I only had one other name who had asked to speak on it, Julie Brunner.
Thank you. Ms. Brunner, welcome. Please introduce
Madam
yourself.
Madam Chair, Senator Marty, and members of the committee, my name is Julie Brunner. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Council of Health Plans. The Council of Health Plans is the trade association for the 8 nonprofit HMOs in Minnesota. The Council of Health Plans shares with the committee and the citizens of the state frustrations over rising health care costs. When health care costs rise, health care premiums rise, and that makes coverage unaffordable for more people. We're concerned that Minnesota's historically low rate of uninsurance has been on the increase. The rate of uninsurance has increased, as you know, from a low of 5.7% in 2001 to 7.4% in 2004. That reflects an additional 100,000 people in that short time. You've also heard some very compelling stories this afternoon about why we need universal coverage for all citizens. The Council of Health Plans supports universal coverage. We want every Minnesotan covered. Studies have shown that when people have health insurance coverage, they're more likely to seek medical care earlier instead of having to wait until they're in crisis and need to be seen in an emergency room. The unanswered question is, how will we achieve universal coverage? We don't believe that a constitutional amendment is the right strategy. Putting a constitutional amendment on the ballot doesn't answer the question. It simply asks voters whether or not citizens should have a right to affordable, quality health care, and that's an easy answer. We all believe health care should be affordable. It fails to address how to slow the rising costs of health care. If we don't address that question, we fail to address the problem. The amendment also fails to define affordable. This one word could tie up the courts for years to come. I think all of us would agree that the courts are not the right place to have this discussion. They don't have the expertise to develop an affordable universal health care system for Minnesota. As a state, we must ask ourselves the tough questions and be willing to work together to find workable solutions. Questions such as, how do we fund universal coverage? What does a basic benefit set include? What are the responsibilities of the various stakeholders, including individuals, employers, providers, insurers, and the government in helping reach the goal of universal coverage? These are basic questions, but not easy ones to answer. A constitutional amendment may appease the proponents who are frustrated by the inaction on this issue, and we understand that. Both at the national and state level, but passing a constitutional amendment doesn't bring us any closer to answering the questions. Although our system is imperfect, Minnesota still probably has the best healthcare system in the country. We have the healthiest population and the lowest number of uninsured. We have higher quality measures and have lower comparable costs than surrounding states, even given the 62 mandates that the HMOs are required to meet in Minnesota. There are improvements that we can make now to our system without waiting until 2008. Today, 78% of uninsured children and 59% of all uninsured Minnesotans are eligible for existing health care programs, but they're not enrolled due to unnecessary barriers and a lack of outreach to them to help get coverage for which they already qualify. There have already been bills introduced, for example, portions of Senate File 2, that would go a long way to move us closer to universal coverage. We support the proposal, the section in Senator Marty's bill that proposes a commission to look at this issue. With respect to the commissioner's working group, we believe that the health plans should be included in the discussion. The health plans are committed to the goal of universal coverage and commit to working with leadership in the legislature and the administration to make this goal a reality. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you, Ms. Bruner. Do we have any questions for the witness?
Madam Chair.
Senator Berger.
Madam Chair and Ms. Bruner, you know, one of the things that always bothers me about the discussion of this in the legislature is we always have somebody like you that comes to the table to tell us how good we are. And it doesn't do you very much good if you're one of the nearly 400,000 people in Minnesota that don't have health insurance to hear that you are living in a state with the lowest number of uninsured, which isn't really true. Hawaii has the lowest number. It doesn't do you any good to hear about how good the quality of care is if you don't feel you can afford to go and talk to anybody about getting any of that quality of care. And so I just wanted to say that just as a way of letting you know that I don't think that those kind of comments help us to engage in the discussion that you're suggesting we need to have.
Senator Hahn.
Thank you. And Madam Chair, I guess my comment would be maybe contrary to Senator Berglund, I think it is helpful to know that when we talk about reforming health care, we need to put it in the context of where we are today. And I think it is helpful to be reminded that we have a system that, as flawed as it is, does work well, maybe better than most systems in the country. And so I think part of the challenge is, as we go forward, do we want to throw out everything that we've done and start over, or do we work with what we have? And I think it is helpful to recognize that we have made progress, that as much as this debate has been before the legislature for a number of years, there has been improvement, and that we can continue to make improvement. But so I guess I thank you for pointing that out, and I appreciate it, and I do think it's of help to the debate. So thank you.
Thank you. Do we have any more questions for the witness? Thank you, Ms. Bruner. Senator Marty, I don't know, she's the last person in the list. Is there anybody in the audience, or do you wish to call somebody?
There are others who may wish to testify. If you want to take more, I think if you ask for them. I just wanted to say that I think we dare not forget the testimony you heard from Ms. Ryan about her daughter, or Ms. Miranda about her upcoming surgery. I don't think we want to have, I think the urgency is we have to address this issue, and I don't think it's going to happen without a constitutional amendment, and I hope we keep that in mind as we move forward. I don't have any other witnesses. There are some others here who, Mr. Leto and others, who would be willing to testify. It depends if you have a few more minutes if you want.
Thank you. We probably have a few minutes for one more person, if there is somebody in the audience who wishes to testify. Thank you.
Madam Chair,
could you please introduce yourself?
Senators, my name is Brad Leto, Legislative Director for the Minnesota AFL-CIO. And I certainly we've been a supporter of a constitutional amendment since we started working on it in about 2004. Wasn't planning on testifying. You heard more eloquent testimony from a number of other people, including unions. Here that we've had a health union health care coalition that's been working, and we worked with Senator Berglund, Senator Marty, others, towards a constitutional amendment. It's about 12 unions that have been working on that. I just wanted to say a couple of things just real quickly. It's been mentioned here, and when we've been told ever since 2004 when we started working on it, that the legislature can do this. We've been told by numerous legislators that the legislature can do this. Since 2004, what has happened is there are more uninsured people in the state of Minnesota, children and adults, and costs have risen dramatically in the state of Minnesota. That has been the result since 2004. I do think there is more political will after November to deal with health care this time. And we are willing to work, and we will be working towards the passage of some other bills on health care to start making progress on health care. But we also believe that it is important to have a constitutional amendment. I believe Senator Wergen mentioned we should do both at the same time if we're going to do it. And I would agree. I think both should be moved along at the same time, because I think there does need to be that accountability factor in there. And if, in fact, everybody will vote for a constitutional amendment, that should be a signal. I mean, if we're going to have 100% vote, which has been implied here, for a constitutional amendment, although I did hear from some people that might vote no, I think that then, in fact, that should tell us something, but we should find out from the public. I think we should find out from the public then with an amendment. And we don't believe in amending the Constitution. We don't take that lightly. I think if you look at what's in the Constitution, and there's been talk about, you know, court challenges with education, everything else, I don't think the court challenge that has happened, though, on education is that saying that it shouldn't be in the Constitution that we have a public system of education. And I think you may get the court involved, you may get the legislature, you know, would be fighting over it and everything else, but the fact of the matter is it would be in the Constitution if it passed, and you could not then at that point, you would have to deal with the results at that point. I am not saying, though, that we will not work towards getting more people covered this year and making substantial progress on health care, because we firmly believe that as well and think it's long overdue. Thank you. I'm happy
Thank
to answer any questions.
Thank you to the witness. Senator Warwick.
Madam Chair, Mr. Leto, just a question. If you look at the broad spectrum of your members, were a constitutional question to be put on the ballot that included such things as every Minnesotan must contribute 5% of their annual gross income to provide the right of every Minnesota to comprehensive and affordable health care, would you suspect that would pass if it said 5% of their gross income?
Madam Chair and Senator Wergen, I don't know. Perhaps it would. I know that within amongst union members, I think if you talked overall amongst union members, you'd find a good share of union members paying much more than 5% of their income to health care.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
That's exactly my point. I believe it would pass with flying colors. Now let's change the words. Let's say that we put on the ballot, every Minnesotan must contribute 50% of their annual gross income toward the right of every Minnesotan to have affordable and comprehensive health care. I think it might change the outcome. Not that the goal is wrong. The goal is right. But I think that's where some of us are coming from in saying we need something behind just those words. And it's not to harm your members. It's to give your members all the information that they need before they go vote on something like this, because we don't know what it would cost until we know what would we be putting in place. And we can all talk about the education debate within the Constitution. It's already there. We struggle with it. We'll continue. We'll do as good a job we can. Let's do a better job of the next thing we put in the Constitution.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Leto.
Madam Chair, Senator Worgan, I mean, we can certainly, and we will certainly debate any language that you want to put in the constitutional amendment. I understand what you're talking about, the cost, but I'm not sure what the fear is here to find out if the public, maybe the public will say, maybe we're all wrong. Maybe the public will say we shouldn't have, health care isn't a right in the Constitution. Perhaps, but I think, you know, I think the legislature, quite honestly, I mean, if we listen to the debate here, as well as we've heard for the last 3 years and longer, we're never going to get serious about, I think, solving the problem, unfortunately. And I believe, very unfortunately, unless the public says, this is it, we've had it, solve this thing. So I respectfully, you know, disagree. I understand what you're saying, and I respectfully disagree, but...
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Leto. If we don't have any more questions, Senator Marty, do we end? Okay. Well, I move that we adjourn to next Monday. Is that our next meeting? Okay. Thank you.